Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me to, I guess, break down a bit of a sad, depressing Illinois game against Washington and preview what's ahead the rest of the season. But John, where do you want to start with the Washington game?
I think I want to start with the obvious because we need to talk about the obvious, which is the defense. And I understand that the Big Ten actually is the conference of quarterbacks. It's nice to see that the injection of money has brought a lot of very talented quarterbacks to the conference, and we have gone up against a number of them. So of course you're going to have some clunkers. You're not going to have, you know, the best game. You had a pretty great game, relatively speaking, against an Ohio State team that's going to probably win the national championship, or at least they should. But I just keep coming back to the fact that I don't want this to be like a huge indictment, but like when thinking about this program being at point A to point B right now, that's great. Like, we're not going to complain about that. Like, we lived through the dog years, like the getting to bowl games consistently, being in that like Iowa, Wisconsin tier where you're flirting with great seasons is wonderful. I think the hope that this was an A to B to C kind of thing is not necessarily dead and gone, but this was like the season to have it kind of fully flesh itself out. And the reason that like I kind of come back to that is why I feel like it's going to be kind of stuck in the A to B range is because the loyalty of Brett Bielema is wonderful. It keeps talented players in the system. It's why Luke Altmaier didn't take $2+ million to go play in the SEC. I get it. That is winning you ball games out there, so I'm not trying to downplay the loyalty effect. However, the fact that I'm just going to name two guys that obviously would not have coached the defense for Illinois this season, but are just two names that people know, two names that I know. I don't know the coaching world that well. But the fact that as of what, whenever Purdue let go of Ryan Walters, as of that moment, neither him nor Jim Leonard were coaching college defenses. That in and of itself is like a data point that says, okay, this is a Big Ten DC job. And there are plenty of guys out there who can call a Big Ten game as a defensive coordinator. You can't settle because you're trying to promote a culture of loyalty only because this is big boy football. And I know Brett probably knows that deep down. And he wanted Aaron Henry to succeed, and we all do as well. I mean, it sucks that it hasn't really worked out, but I just kind of come back to that, like, this is the Big Ten. If we just talked about quarterbacks, or if I just talked about quarterbacks, because I haven't let you talk much, but if we are just talking about how good the quarterbacks in the Big Ten are, well, that just means that the conference is elevating itself. That means that you're going to be able to get pretty much whoever you want at the DC position for anyone who's not, you know, a sitting head coach or a DC at one of these higher echelon programs. So the fact that you can conservatively say it's a top 25, top 30 job for defensive minds, I feel like you should be able to play up to that level and get a great mind in there. And I know Brett kind of wants to do his own thing, but hopefully he realizes this in the same way that Tony Peterson only got the 1 year. And I'm not saying that Aaron Henry needs to be let go, because maybe there's some kind of renaissance this back half of the year. Maybe some people show progress. Maybe they sneak their way into the playoff. Maybe they win a playoff game and then this doesn't materialize. But thus far, we've got enough of a sample size where I don't feel great about it. So that's like kind of my overarching thoughts in terms of the defense. We can get into the nitty gritty of it. I'm more than happy to, but that's kind of just like high level. When you think about the people that are out there and you think about the job that this should be, this job put a guy at a head coaching spot. Like, that's just the way it should be. And I'm not saying that Aaron Henry maybe one day won't be a head coach, but like the expectation is that you should be able to churn guys through, not with like, you know, year over year, but every couple of years, get guys who are on the upward trajectory. So that's that's where I want to start.
Yeah. I mean, all fair points. I think Aaron Henry would probably be the first to tell you that this hasn't gone according to plan this season. And to your point, we took a chance, or Brett took a chance hiring a guy who didn't have that Power Four defensive coordinator experience. And, you know, he was betting on a guy that had been in his system he thought was ready for the job. And, you know, it doesn't appear to be yielding the results that I think anyone was hoping, especially given the talent that we have. It's not like this roster is devoid of talent on the defensive side of the ball. There's plenty of guys. Look at Gabe Akis, who I feel like makes an impact at times, but hasn't had the consistency. And part of that, I think comes down to the schematics of how are we attacking offenses, and you have other pieces around him. I know Xavier Scott's been out for the majority of the year, and he's supposed to be kind of a big focal point of the defense, but injuries happen and you have to be ready to adjust. And, you know, I haven't really seen any progress of anything. I feel like we've regressed as the season's gone on. I know you play better and better teams. You start getting into Big Ten play from what we had in the front half of the season, but we saw signs early in the year that things weren't, you know, in great shape, and it hasn't really gotten better. I know we've played great offenses. I know we've played great quarterbacks. But even with that, there's moments where, you know, we look lost. And at the end of the day, you know, coaching is what it's going to come back to. And I know Brett said, I need to get more involved in the defense, but, you know, maybe part of the blame is on him of it's not just the defensive coordinator, but why weren't you involved more, you know, earlier on if you knew that this was a weakness? Or, you know, where are these issues coming from? Is it the schematics? Is it the talent and asking guys to do things that don't fit their traits? I don't really have those answers, but apparently Illinois' defense doesn't either, because it hasn't gotten better. And like you said, there's still an opportunity. There's still four potential, you know, hopefully five games left for Illinois to, and for Aaron Henry and his defense to make a case for why they should be retained, and, you know, or why some of these players shouldn't be recruited over going forward as well. So it's not just the coaching staff, it's the players as well. And I'm curious if we're going to see some changes at this point. You've had eight games of a sample size. And does that mean, all right, guys who aren't getting the job done, we're moving down the depth chart, whether you played well in the preseason? When it comes to games and execution, if there's mistakes, you have to be held accountable. And maybe it's new guys getting opportunities and seeing who rises to the occasion, but it certainly has not gone according to plan this year.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is like you brought up the talent, and this isn't a team that's bereft of any kind of defensive talent. So either it's the scheme isn't matching, it's not elevating the players. Like, okay, maybe I grant you the fact that this isn't, you know, Ohio State's defense. You're not going to overpower with any kind of scheme just because you have the Jimmies and the Joes. But if you don't have the Jimmies and the Joes, then you need to be able to progressively develop players over the course of a season. And you also need to match your scheme to what best fits them, or you need to get them understanding your scheme better. There has to be some kind of schematic advantage that you build in. If across the board, especially with these teams in the Big Ten that are, you know, 4 through 12, let's call it, they're going to be pretty similarly talented. It's getting a bit more top heavy. Like I just said about the quarterback thing, you're seeing more good quarterbacks in the conference. You're seeing more recruits go to Big Ten schools in terms of, like, okay, maybe that Big 12 program that had a blip and, you know, got 3-4 stars in a class, that's probably not happening as much. They're getting rated by Big Ten teams who can pay players now. So you're seeing these good Big Ten teams. And yes, the football 101 and Brett being, you know, a mastermind when it comes to making sure that you don't lose a football game, like, that stuff will still play, yes, but then the scheme also needs to adjust to beat that, you know, whatever median level talent that both teams have when you're playing any other Big Ten team. And that's not to say that, you know, they should have, you know, had a super close game with a Washington team, but, like, that's something where you are and you're also wasting a great offensive output. And it's like, I don't know how many more years we have of Barry Lunny, and hopefully more, but Luke Altmaier's gone after this year. And it's just one of those where it's frustrating that you're not getting the adjustments that we've historically seen. Like, even from the defensive line, it seems like that would get better as the season's gone on. And maybe this is the four games where it kicks on, but it's just not really rising to meet the moment in these bigger games. Like I said, I know Ohio State, they played relatively well, but, like, you just can't keep having these kind of defensive outputs where you're giving up so many points. So I don't know. I it's beating a dead horse. I understand, but like, we still need to talk about it. And you know, we've got a bye week coming up after this, so we can kind of belabor some of these points and give more things to look at and marinate on after the bye week or during the bye week, I guess I should say. But like, I get that these things have been processed and thought about, and you know, Brett and Aaron Henry talked about it in the press conference. I'm not ignorant to that. Like, they know it as well as we do. Getting out ahead of it and not trying to run away from it is good messaging by them. But at a certain point, the talk needs to turn into action. And I know that they know that, but like, it just needs to happen. And if it doesn't happen, then yeah, you're talking about, okay, well, maybe either this talent isn't good enough and these coaches aren't good enough recruiters, or these coaches aren't getting the schematic advantages taken care of and squared away to the point where you're getting that little bit of an edge.
One of the frustrating things to me, and I'll be the first to tell you, like, Damon Williams, one of my favorite quarterbacks in college football. He's fantastic, but there's
so good
no reason he should be essentially unstoppable as he was last Saturday. I don't think we got a single stop aside from a dropped pass by Washington. You know, 7 or 8 times they marched down and scored points on us. And you know, I don't care if you're a Heisman Trophy caliber guy, that's inexcusable for a, you know, conference opponent to allow that, or a conference opponent's defense to allow that to a quarterback like Damon Williams. And it wasn't just allowing first downs. It was some of the manner in which that happened. 3rd and 18, 3rd and 13. And we went, you know, go back to the USC game when we gave up a couple 3rd and 13s, 3rd and 14s. Like, you can't allow those kind of situations to happen. And no, I don't know what it is. You have to maybe go completely away from whatever your philosophy was and say, all right, instead of only rushing three, because we weren't necessarily getting to the quarterback. And I know he's a scrambling guy, but when you're sending three in, you can't still let the guy scramble for whatever, 15 yards, 16 yards on 3rd and long. And like, maybe you send a blitz and say, okay, we're going to force the ball out of his hand early. And he's not going to be able to throw it all the way to the sticks, and you're going to leave your guys one-on-one. But like, you've seen it. This is extrapolating it a little farther, but in the last year or two, I've noticed this on Hail Mary plays at the end of the games. I've seen a lot of teams change their strategy from only rushing 2 or 3 to like, why don't we just send 6 and leave everyone else on the back line and force the ball out of their hand. And like, it's a similar concept when it comes to these 3rd and longs in my mind, that maybe we need to just completely overhaul the strategy there, because it's simply not working.
Well, and like, I get the whole, it's a great point, because like, I to some degree get the muddle rush. Like, we're not going to, you know, over rush our lanes to then give him a way to step up and through and get an easy 7 yards, maybe 20 yards. If you're just shooting right between the edge and the tackle, like, okay, I get that. That is what the game plan was at a certain point. That's one way to make him beat you with his arm. But he then is also then summarily beating you with his legs, because he's able to create and move around the pocket. And then even though, yeah, he's throwing the ball, it's still using his athleticism and mobility. So then to your point, the counter to that isn't necessarily just like, okay, well, now we drop into like more of a base coverage and we rush 4 still, but maybe we rush a little bit more aggressively. It's like, no, you can dial up the blitz. And I know that these guys have played more football than you and I. They've forgotten more than you and I will ever know. I get it. But like, there's a 30,000 foot view where it's just like very obvious that strategy is not working. You don't need to overcorrect and just run. You don't need to run engage 8 on every single play, but you need to be able to dial up some level of pressure, cover all your lanes so he can't scramble out and through. He's got to get the ball quickly. Like, you just can't trust this defensive backfield to cover for, you can't really trust an NFL defensive backfield to cover for 10 to 15 seconds. Like, that's insanity. So like, yeah. That's just something where the strategy didn't seem to be developed over the course of the game. And that's just something where you're then hoping that you get a bailout, you know, and you should have too. You should have gotten the bailout fumbles. You had like 3 opportunities. And I know that the turnover fairy was favorable for us in the Duke game and early on. And now we're not getting that luck, but like, man, you can't rely on, that's why, this is exactly why you can't rely on that, because yeah, sometimes all the fumbles bounce into the opponent's arms and you can't do anything about that. So you have to be able to have a plan to turn them, not turn them over, but to stop them, so that then your offense doesn't have to just go out and be playing superhero ball and Luke's forcing throws. And then, you know, guys are trying to go up making contested catches and they're bouncing off people. And it's like, he would have never made that throw to Hank Beatty to Forsett for the pick, like if he didn't have to because he felt like he was having to play superhero. Like these are just then the things that then compound on the offensive side. And then you're stymieing the offense's progress, which is maybe something that could hurt you the last couple games of the year. So it's like, it, obviously it all ties in together, and it's, you know, you want to put the stopgap on it as soon as possible, because this is something where we could be talking in a month or so about how, you know, this is great. We have a chance to get back to a 10 win season and go from there. But for where we're sitting at right now, it's like, I'm very reticent to just be like, oh yeah, Rutgers has a bunch of injuries and they're kind of looking like they're on the slide and Shiano might be out of town. It's like, yeah, with our defense, I just can't trust that we're going to shut anyone down right now.
Yeah. I mean, and to your point about Luke Altmyer, like you said it earlier, it feels like we're wasting an incredible year from him. And I think his year is almost going under the radar, as weird as it is to say, because of the expectations he had coming in. But because you have three losses and because one of those, that Indiana game, was such a massacre, I think his numbers are getting lost in, you know, the other storylines right now. And he's been fantastic, but the defense isn't putting him in situations even to have short fields or anything along those lines, yet he's overcoming, putting up points, you know, driving our team down, putting them on his back. And it's all kind of feels like a bit of a waste. I know we're still 5-3. I know you and I said, you know, 9-3 was our record prediction. I think we'll probably be favored the rest of the year. So very much still attainable to get to that. But the manner in which it's happened, like I do this every year, and I think most fans do, you have your realistic side of your brain, the expectations of where it's at. And then come game time, when those losses happen, you never feel good about a loss. So it's always going to feel way worse. But when you step back and say, okay, what were expectations coming into the year? I think, you know, it's sad to lose that best case scenario playoff situation that everyone was rooting for. But 9-3 is still attainable, which I think was still more on the optimistic case scenario for most people. Say the average person, you know, the Vegas line, 8 wins was kind of the expectation. So you go 3-1 down the stretch, which is very much doable. I still think 4-0 in the final four games here is attainable. But you kind of get back to where you were expected to be. So hopefully things get corrected on the defensive side of the ball, because, you know, we know this offense is capable of putting up points, and I just hate seeing the long field for the offense having to drive down 90 yards, or, you know, getting the ball back after a kickoff out of the end zone because they score a touchdown on every possession. So we have to drive, and it would be nice to play some complimentary football down the stretch.
Yeah. And I know I tweeted out that this is a playoff caliber offense, and maybe, you know, the run game would have other things to say about that. It's just more of the concept of, you have a sneaky, great offensive coordinator that we know is awesome and that the U of I fan base absolutely loves and adores. But like that, you combo that offensive coordinator with how Luke is playing, and yeah, that's something where if you have like a fairly above average defense, and you're potentially thinking about maybe winning one playoff game. I'm not saying you're like going to go on a huge run, but like, okay, this offense can get hot with the way that Barry Lenny has called games this year. It's like, how can you not, you know, just expect him to press the right buttons, and then you hope the defense could show up to the point where, yeah, we can rely on them to get a couple stops and it might be a shootout, and then you hopefully get one win in the playoffs. Obviously that's pretty much dead and gone, unless somehow we get like some shenanigans in the second and third tiers of both the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah.
Which I don't necessarily foresee happening, because as long as the SEC plays only 8 conference games, like they're just going to have more top heaviness. So I'm not necessarily convinced that we're going to get all the breaks, but yeah, you finish strong. You have 3 of 4 games at home to finish the season, and your one away game is up in Madison with a program that's kind of limping to the finish line. It's hard not to feel optimistic about the potential to go 4-0. And this would be something that, kind of like last year, where you end on a high note, it puts a lot of good taste in people's mouth. You have better sells for recruiting in the portal. You might be able to, if you do turn over that defensive job, it not only becomes, yeah, we put a guy at a power 2 job in Ryan Walters, but now we're still on the upswing. We had back-to-back 10 win seasons. Like, these are things that, even if there is some consideration for the season didn't go that great, you can still then improve upon it. And then maybe I'm eating my words, where I was saying, yeah, I don't really know if this is going from A to B to C, and we're just kind of going to be stuck in the B plus area for a while. So there's of course a lot to get excited about, but I'm just, yeah, like I want to believe that it's going to end that well, but I'm also now kind of like guarding myself a bit, because you were kind of hoping to see the, yeah, Brett's going to be in the office until, you know, 5 a.m. And the defense is going to have its huge bounce back game and kind of set the tone to get things righted. And it's just, they're objectively one of the top three worst defenses of the Big Ten. And yes, I know some of that is opponent dependent, but like you just can't have goals that are wanting to be Big Ten champions and have a defensive output the way that it's been this season, no matter what opponents you played. I don't care if you play Oregon, Ohio State, Washington, USC, UCLA when they're going good. Like, I don't care if you're playing all, like, that you still need, if you want to be a great team, you got to be able to figure that stuff out.
We talked about the quarterbacks we've played this season. Would you believe me if I told you that Ethan Kaliak-Manis has more pass yards than anyone we've faced this year?
Dan, that's got to be a bald-faced lie. I don't believe you at all.
Literally leads the Big Ten in pass yards this season.
And that's got to be some bye week shenanigans, right? Something like that? Or is it per game?
They played eight games. He is seventh in the nation in pass yards. He's ahead of Jaden Maiava. He's ahead of Darian Mensah. Mensah's eighth. Maiava's 10th in the nation. And then you got Devon Williams was 14th. Luke's 18th. Mendoza's farther down the list now. So we played some great quarterbacks, and yet Ethan Kaliak-Manis, of all people, in his 100th year of college football, it feels like the Perry Ellis of college football, he is arguably just as good as some of these quarterbacks we've faced. And I know he doesn't necessarily come with the same prestige playing for Rutgers, but he is quietly having a very good year. And, you know, his wide receiver KJ Duff is fourth in the country in receiving yards. I think he went for like 240 yards last week receiving. So he's jumped up to the top of the Big Ten in receiving yards ahead of Mekhi Lemon, ahead of Hank Beatty. So you got a good 1-2 punch with the QB wide receiver duo this week. And it just doesn't get easier in the Big Ten.
I feel like people sneaky forget. I mean, maybe some Illinois fans, because they follow the recruiting scene, and Kaliak-Manis out of Antioch. I mean, I know that that's basically Wisconsin, so he's not really like the Chicagoland boy, but when he was going to Minnesota, he was like a very highly touted recruit. I think he was a four-star, if memory serves correctly. So like, he's got the talent. And I mean, we saw it last year that his legs can be a problem. Like, he was always a pretty good athlete. Like, when he came in after, who was it that knocked out Tanner, what's his face, for Minnesota when we were at that game. And he came in and he like was running around a fair bit. Like, he's a pretty good athlete. He throws only fastballs, or he was throwing only fastballs at that time. But like, he's got the talent. He's got the arm ability. He's got enough athleticism with his legs. And yeah, their receivers are legit. It's going to be probably going to be a points fest. If I had to gander a guess at the how things go from how Vegas is seeing it. But the one thing I will say, and I mentioned it earlier, like, they have so many injuries. I was listening to Shiano's press conference, and one, that dude loves talking about time lags. Like, he would love the podcast game. He's like, wait, so you guys taped it on a Wednesday, but it doesn't come out until Thursday. That's what we call time lag. And he was like talking about how like these things with like development and how injuries, like, you know, we might be changing processes, but there's a lag from when you see the changes implemented to when you actually get the benefits. And I was like, and he said that about a couple other things too. And I was just like, this guy loves thinking about time and space and how much things are affected by past and future events and whatnot. So, but he was also then talking about his injuries that they've sustained. And I think he said something about like 20 some odd people are not practicing or didn't play.
Yeah.
And that they're not able to, you know, feel the second, you know, Devo squad essentially, or Devo portion of their practice. Which cry me a river, because that's football. Like, that's kind of how things rock this time of year, especially for their development programs. But like, that's something to keep an eye on. It specifically called out like the tackles and how many tackles they have lost. So it's something worth monitoring and something where maybe Gabe gets right. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if they're going to give Gabe time to get to the quarterback because they might just lob it up and you know gash our DBs, but it's going to be probably a pretty high scoring affair if I had to guess.
For as bad or disappointed as we've been in our defense, Rutgers is that much worse. Pretty much any way you slice it, pass yards allowed, rush yards allowed, stop rate, any way you slice it, they're a bottom 25 defense in almost every category. And to your point, yeah, injuries have played a factor. But watching some of that Purdue-Rutgers game last week, Rutgers literally gave up a touchdown where the cornerback was not even lined up. There was nobody guarding a wide receiver. Well, I guess it was Devin Maccabee that was split out wide, but literally no one even lined up. It was a 3 yard. It was first and goal or whatever it was from the 3 yard line. And he just took like five steps, put his hand up and said, "Hey, throw it over here." And the quarterback just lobbed it to him for the easiest touchdown I've seen in college football in like
decades. I love college sports.
So they have their own issues. And I know Shiano plays us tough. Bielema faced him in 2021. We lost. That was the last time they were in Champaign. And then obviously the Pat Bryant game last year. But do you want to try to guess 2021? Illinois lost that game. It was in Champaign.
Yep. I
remember. Who our two touchdown scorers were?
Oh, boy. 2021. That's Brett's first year. So that's Brandon Peters. And Brian Hightower.
The touchdown scores, it was Isaiah Williams on a long touchdown pass. Okay. And it was Daniel Barker scored a touchdown in that game. But
okay. I was on the right track of like former guys who transferred away. I should have guessed Lilino though.
Kind of a gross football game. It was Noah Vedral was quarterback for Rutgers. They had Gavin Wimsett come in and try to run one. I mean, they did have a good
down, the one play he came in for on fourth down and they convert. Oh my gosh.
And they had a pretty good running back duo. They had Isaiah Pacheco and Kyle Manungai as the running backs in that one. And then they had that guy, Johnny Langan. Remember him? He was like the Taysom Hill. He was tight end. He was wide receiver, running back, even threw the ball like 30 times on the season.
I think he was a converted quarterback, right? Yeah. That was like the whole thing is that he was like a highly prized recruit from the late teens.
I remember him having this catch on the sideline where he got absolutely lit up. I want to say it was Sidney Brown just destroyed him. And somehow it was like a fourth and 18 or something. And he caught it on the sideline and got up and flexed. I'm like, how he has to be concussed. I don't know how he's doing this, but that was
Johnny football.
That was a crazy game. But yeah, that's the same game in which we were down, I think, 3 or maybe 4. I think we were down 4. I think it was 21-17 in the fourth quarter, driving down. We have it like, you know, starting to get into Rutgers territory. It's like the 30, 35-yard line. 4th and 1 with a minute left. We still are sitting on 3 timeouts. We do the pitch play to Chase Brown, and he gets tripped up by the cornerback.
To the short side, I'm pretty sure.
Short
if
side.
If memory serves.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And he got...
I want to put my head through my TV right now just thinking about it.
It was just a gross football game. And I remember that moment just being like, so that's it. That's just how it ends. We 4th and 1 and we go kind of on the fake inside handoff pitch to Chase Brown. And he just couldn't quite get his legs through the tackle from wherever the cornerback was on Rutgers. But it was a ugly game. So Shiano, you know, he knows how to scheme these guys, Brett Bielema and Shiano. I feel like they're kind of not two ships passing the night, but they're kind of running parallel lives and guys with NFL kind of credentials. And I feel like when they match up, they usually know what to expect from each other and it tends to be a good battle. So looking forward to it, but this needs to be I need to come up with a term for like what this week is. I think this is like this is a remind them week. It's remind them that we're Illinois football, the new Illinois football. We had expectations coming into the year. And like, this is the opportunity to get right and correct course. Like, I don't know, maybe last couple of weeks where you're navigating on your GPS and you accidentally take a wrong turn. And then you spend like the next 2 blocks driving where it's saying recalculating route. And you're about to see if you're going to add 20 more minutes to your ETA or if like there's a quick correction. That's what
you're hoping for, a clover leaf.
That's what you're hoping for. Yeah. So that's what it feels like this week to me, is like we're in this recalculating period. And is it, okay, we're getting right back on track, we're going to get to our destination, or are we in for a longer detour? And, you know, that's where I stand on this game.
Agreed. And to go back to your fun, in when we're doing the podcast in 2029 and we are playing Washington again, you're going to have to do this. And we're going to have to remember that Jordan Anderson scored a touchdown, because that's going to be like the name that we're going to have to recall.
Oh, yeah.
From this past week, because that's a kind of a tangent, but it's still funny how it's like you get some of these guys where, you know, we're trying to be like Bob and remember wide receivers from the 80s and 90s. And Jordan Anderson putting his name in the record books last week. But for Rutgers, it's Schiano's like kind of a similar Brett Bielema style, like you said, where they're football guys and they're, you know, kind of like I don't want to say calming presences, but they're stable bases. They're not like these super volatile guys that are going to be, you know, like going too crazy. But that's like also Rutgers needs that from Schiano, even though I know he's probably maybe a bit more emotional than Brett, but Brett likes to mix it up, especially when he's talking to the refs. So I feel like, yeah, it's going to be kind of like who has it last. It's going to be like a basketball game, essentially, like who has the final possession, who's going to, you know, be able to hit that last second three. And I'm just praying it's us.
See, I view this as a little bit, I guess, differently than you do, just because I feel like there's levels to this Big Ten. And I know the defense has not performed up to snuff, but to me, I think our offense is a class or two better than Rutgers. I know Rutgers has moved the ball and put up points, but their defense is even worse than ours. And I think I could see Illinois running away with this one. Like, we'll get to our predictions, but like I see Luke absolutely carving up a depleted defense. Like I said, against Purdue, they had missed assignments galore. There was another touchdown where Ryan Brown threw it into the corner of the end zone and there was not a guy in the frame on the pass. So you have guys not even lining up on assignments correctly. Like, it's fundamental stuff that is, you know, certainly not Big Ten caliber football that we've seen. And I think the other thing too, Rutgers, they played in West Lafayette last week. They fly back to the East Coast and then they have to get back on a plane after losing kind of a heartbreaking game. Or sorry, I guess they overcame, but they started and sputtered in that game early, came back, won it. But you got to go home and then you got to get back on a plane, fly all the way back to, you know, the Midwest and play another one. And I don't know, I think that's a depleting feeling, especially when you're already beat up and guys have to like go home, get treatment, get on a plane, fly right back, play another game. And it's just, I don't know, at this point in the season, when you're 4-4, as Rutgers is, and you haven't had a ton of success, you had four losses to lose the Big Ten, I think the confidence that they had in the non-con part of the schedule where they went 3-0 has kind of worn off, and they're, you know, maybe losing confidence. And then you got to go play a team like Illinois that I think is going to be hungry. And I think Brett Bielema is a master motivator, and I think he'll press the right buttons with the guys and say, look, you know, some of our hopes of college football playoffs might be gone, but we're setting a new challenge and we need to see it, you know, meet expectations or exceed expectations down the stretch. So I think it's a good time for our team. You played at Washington, you're home for Rutgers, then you got a bye week, so you don't have to travel. Then you get Maryland at home, then you don't have to travel till, you know, the following week at Wisconsin. You almost have a month straight where you're back in Champaign, going through treatment, kind of in a familiar environment. And I think we'll be ready to go. So I see it maybe a little differently than you, and I know Schiano's played us tough, but I really think there's a good chance that Illinois comes out and kind of makes a bit of a statement and corrects course.
I guess here's how I'll cover myself, where I think we'll win, and I'll just get into, I know we're going to, I'm going to, in editor's decision, we're inverting predictions and players of the game. We're going to go picks first.
All right.
I'm going to go 44-38, but I don't know if that's going to be them backdooring a cover where it's, you know, 44-31 and they just happen to get like a late score, or if it's something where we're, you know, driving late and we're needing a touchdown and then we get it. I don't think we're ever really like comfortably outside, or they're ever comfortably outside the number. I don't we won't be covering for many minutes of the game is what I'm trying to say. I just feel like it'll be something where maybe we will late, but and maybe we never really like give up the lead, but I just can see it kind of always being within striking distance. Cause yeah, maybe I just have Shiana Rutgers just in the back of my head just being like, ah, there's just no way we're like going to run away with this game. So there's going to be some shenanigans going on.
Do you want to couple that with your player of the week as well?
I feel like, have we really ever hit like a, I guess this team is so, where it's good, it's so good that like it feels chalky picking like, I don't know, Hank Beatty or Colin Dixon or it's Luke Altmyer even.
Yeah.
I feel like we've strayed away from that. So I guess I'll go with it, talking about the cradle of running backs. We're going to get seeing Khalil Valentine on a football field is very good for us. And I'm glad that his knee is somehow not snapped in two. So he's going to be my pick of the week. I feel like this is like kind of what Aiden did last year, where he finished the season super strong and you were hoping that it would, you know, vault him to bigger things this year. And then he's dealt with his own injury issues. Seeing Khalil come back and the fact that he hasn't, I don't think, dealt with too much. Hopefully this can be a similar springboard for him where he just kind of takes off these back four games, back five, and, you know, really asserts himself as RB1. And we look forward to him being a 1,500-yard rusher next year.
Hey, we'll take that. I am going to go, I guess, Illinois open as a 13.5-point favorite. It's now down to 12.5, but essentially Vegas sees this as a 2-touchdown Illinois victory. You're saying we're not going to cover. I'm going to go the other way. Like I said, I think I could see Luke really carving up this defense and putting up a lot of points, like 50 burger we're talking. So I could see Illinois Rutgers get together, scores get a little bit weird. So give me a weird score. Give me 51-22 Illinois and a bit of a blowout.
Aww.
I don't know. I just feel it. And I think my pick of the week, my player of the game, last week I went with Joe Barna, who is a little bit of an out there pick, and he had the highest PFF grade of the entire defense. So he played pretty well. I'm going to pick another guy that is, you know, produced at times more so in the start of the season and hasn't necessarily seen as many reps probably as he would have liked. But Justin Bowick's going to be my pick this week. I think big target in the red zone. There's going to be a lot of opportunities throwing the ball around. And I think Justin Bowick gets another touchdown or two this week. So that'll be my pick.
All I can think of is it was like one of the only years I did summer school, a math class. I think it was fifth grade going into sixth grade, was that math teacher. He loved the number 51 because it's divisible by 17. It's like, huge. You would think that 51 is, yeah. People think like 51's a prime number. Well, kids that age like would be like, oh, 51's a prime number. And he was like, nope, it's actually divisible.
It's going to be one of those games where it gets weird. Maybe you get a safety, maybe you get, you know, some sort of 2-point conversion trick play, missed extra point. Who knows? I just, you know, November football, Illinois Rutgers screams weird football scores. So I just had to go on a limb and give us a 2 non-traditional, I guess, football numbers. 51's not that far off, but I'd say
22. Yeah.
22 is a little bit.
That's them going for two. That's them being like, yes, exactly. We got to go for two. Even if the math doesn't make sense, they're still just going for two. And then, yeah, you get 51-22. So, I mean, it's not that far out of the realm of possibility.
Hey, get your team to 6-3 with three good opportunities down the stretch to win. And, you know, we've seen Brett Bielema teams pick up some momentum late in the season and carry that on to a good bowl performance. I don't know if we're looking at bowl projections. I haven't looked at them in a while, but I find it funny that there's a good chance the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl is probably, we're in that ballpark, as well as ReliaQuest Bowl. Some of the bowls we've been familiar with the last couple of years are probably, in our wheelhouse at this point with how we're projecting out. Nashville or the Music City Bowl is probably another one that we haven't played in that I think would be an interesting one if we were able to get Illini fans down to Nashville. It's probably easier than driving or flying all the way down to Florida. And I don't know, after having the success of, you know, overcoming expectations or over exceeding expectations last season and everyone kind of being excited about going to that game, there's probably a less enthusiasm, less novelty to going and playing a new bowl game in Florida, but still a bowl game, still a lot of opportunities ahead. So you got to get one more here in the win column to ensure the bowl game, but I like our chances.
As long as we're not in a cold weather city come bowl season, that's when you know that your program has officially arrived. Now, many may say, just get to two straight bowl games and we're going to be super happy. And I don't necessarily disagree, but yeah, you get Nashville and south of Nashville. You're rocking well.
Where do you stand on I don't even know if these bowl games, I haven't looked at the bowls for this either. Season, but like a Pinstripe Bowl in New York or a Duke's Mayo Bowl. I want to say that's in like South Carolina or North Carolina or something like that. But mm-hmm. What do you think of those two bowl games?
I don't necessarily want to go to the Pinstripe because I just, like I said, associating a bowl game with cold climate feels like either you got to be in the playoffs or you just scrape by. That feels like we went 5-7 and our academics were good enough. And so we're playing in, you know, the cold weather bowl or something like that. So I know that.
But aren't we 2-0 in bowl games in football games inside baseball stadiums? I think of the Northwestern game from a decade and a half ago. And then the Northwestern game last year where we seem to be really good at football
yeah,
games in baseball
size,
stadiums.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you know what, Dan, you're right. Actually, yeah, let's go Pinstripe Bowling. I don't care what the record is. We're making it happen with the Pinstripe Bowl. I mean,
that fact alone, Brett Bielema would have to wear a baseball manager uniform. He's got to come fully dressed in uniform
with no pads. So he's just wearing like, he's got like the big poofy shoulders and, you know, sockets in his pants where there should be pads.
Is that one of the weirdest things in sports that baseball managers wear the actual uniform? Like you got 85-year-old managers that are out here dressed like they're trick or treating. Like,
I mean, I do love like the fact that it's based in the tradition of obviously like you used to have just player managers and they never really got rid of that. And anytime your number could probably be called. So they just kept doing that. But yeah, it is kind of odd, especially with like seeing the strict departure from NBA and NFL coaches going from like, oh yeah, we're going to wear suits on the sideline. So now it's like anything that makes you feel comfortable. So it would be interesting if in our lifetimes, baseball managers ever went away from wearing the uniforms, but
Brett Bielema learned early not to wear the big orange hoodie. I think he's figured out blue's the better look for him. But actually, side tangent, I heard an interview clip with Brad Underwood where they're asking him about his sweatsuit. And he said he's got an Illinois orange sweatsuit and like one of those little hats to wear for the
I think he
thought about wearing it for the Illinois State exhibition game. But if he pulls that out at some point during the season, the internet's going to absolutely love that. So I'm all in favor of that.
If he does that, then Brett's got to recreate the image that you made of him.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The flip flops and the
the Florida
jumpsuit.
Grills.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
One's good. And I think, I don't know, the Brad Underwood one as well was one that we got some pretty good play on of him sitting in front of like a village in, I don't know, the Balkan
Eastern
states.
Yeah,
with a cigarette and a little scallywag cap or whatever you call those little things. So,
yeah,
I don't know, but plenty.
Oh, to fully answer your question, it would also be hilarious to see Brett Bielema drenched in mayo. That would be.
Oh,
and I would want that only for the tweet, for the future tweet usage of Bob Zupke to just have, you know, in 2028 when we're in the playoffs, he can just post a picture of Brett Bielema covered in mayo and make some kind of innuendo about that. Yeah. So that might be why we want the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Well, thanks to AI, we could probably get an image of Brett Bielema bathing in mayo at any point we want.
True.
So
that's true. That's true.
We might not have to see it, but it would be even funnier. I don't know. I was rooting for North Carolina because I think Belichick in a Duke's Mayo Bowl, like, would be one of the funniest things. That guy, just his sternness and his,
you'd have to get
sincerity,
Jordan involved
having to
somehow.
Like, yeah, trying to smile after he gets doused in mayo would be one of the funnier images I could think of in college football. So anyway, big
that
test this
talk.
Week. Yeah. Well, hopefully plenty more bowl talk after this Rutgers game this week when we're officially bowl eligible, but 11 a.m. game, NBC national broadcast. What do we call it? This is the remind them game. Illinois mm-hmm, football mm-hmm. is going to be 9-3, be in a premier bowl game from here on out. Whereas, I don't know, Rutgers, Shiano's a good coach, but I feel like he's sputtered a little bit and has kind of leveled out as a 7-5 team at best. And I don't know that he's necessarily on the hot seat, but things have been trending the wrong way from Rutgers. I think there's still a lot for Illinois to build on, and hopefully this is the week that the defense gets right.
Yeah, he was good for when they were in the Big Ten East and they needed to get some relevancy back and not be at the basement. But now with everything with conferences shifting and NIL and whatnot, he's not necessarily ill-equipped to take care of that, but just you can probably get a new young coach in Rutgers to rejuvenate that area and fertile recruiting grounds and get them fun again somehow. I don't know. I feel like they just got to start taking swings until they find their Signetti.
Yeah, hopefully not this. No swings being taken this week. Illinois sold out crowd again, fourth straight. Memorial Stadium, I think it's supposed to be 50s and cloudy, no rain that I saw on the forecast. So starting to be that November-ish football weather. And, you know, still plenty of football to be played down the stretch. So look forward to it. But thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the Field Pass. We appreciate it. And as always, go Illini.